You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 402.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
Hanging in there?
Keeping my spirits up.
It's a memorial show part two here on the Flopcast.
Yes.
So we're going to jump right back into covering everyone we lost from the world of pop culture in 2019. That's the plan. We started it last week. We finished this week.
And how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm full of coffee. But before we get to more coffee and more people on our big giant memorial list, how about National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Well, this should lighten the mood some. January 21st is Squirrel Appreciation Day.
I do appreciate squirrels.
We do. We even have our own little name for them, right, here in the show.
Here in the immediate Chickentown area, we don't see a lot of pure squirrels. What we get around here is a squouse. It's a squirrel-mouse hybrid.
Yes, a mixture, if you will.
The rest of the world, you're more likely to come across a squirrel.
True that.
All squirrel, no mouse.
Yes, there's over 200 different types of squirrels.
They're everywhere.
They're ubiquitous.
The ones we see around here are mostly gray.
Yeah, red. The gray squirrel. The squirrels fall into three different categories. There's
angry.
The angry.
Very angry.
And the dopey.
And dopey.
Have you ever seen a dopey squirrel?
Explain, please.
Okay, so if you, for example, leave your Halloween pumpkin outside for a little too long and it ferments, and the squirrels nibble on those, let me tell you, it results in some fine entertainment on YouTube.
So you've seen some squirrels staggering around?
Drunken squirrels.
All full of pumpkins.
They just seem like they're having the best little time.
Yeah, that happens to people, too.
Those videos aren't as funny for some reason. At least to me.
We mostly get the gray ones around here, so it's exciting when you see a different kind of squirrel or squouse.
Yeah, you know, I didn't have cause to leave New England much until I was in my 20s, and I went down to the Mid-Atlantic region for a summer, and that's when I first discovered the black squirrel.
The black ones are out there. I've seen them. Those are fun. Those are cool.
Those are neat.
Well, I've been to Niagara Falls a couple of times, the mayor and I, and both times we've been at Niagara Falls, we look at the water for 20 seconds. And then the rest of the time, we're looking. It's all black squirrels running around at Niagara Falls. And that's what we watch.
They're cool.
Yes. Do you appreciate Secret Squirrel from Hanna-Barbera?
Yes.
That's a good squirrel.
Yes.
It's got the little hat-mask combo.
That comes down over the eyes.
It's a good look for a squirrel. Why don't they all wear those hats?
And his buddy Morocco Mole.
Morocco Mole, yes, a mole wearing a fez. Could we make it our project for the year 2020 to just try to put little secret squirrel hats on all the squirrels?
Yes, yes.
Why isn't anybody working on that already? Like, we're almost 8 years into the Flopcast before it occurred to us, why aren't we putting hats on squirrels?
It's true. What have we been doing with our lives?
This is going to be good.
Appreciate some squirrels on January 21st, or any other day you feel like appreciating squirrels. Don't let us tell you what to do.
I will totally do that, especially if they have a hat. Cornflake, we've been doing this for several years. It's our memorial show.
Yes.
We do it every year. For years, we would just do one show a year. And for the last couple of years, now we break it into two, just because it takes too long to get through this list. But this is at the end of the year. A lot of shows, a lot of magazines and things will do this. They'll have a memorial episode where they run through everybody that we lost from the world of pop culture or whatever over the course of the year. And we wait until January. Everybody else does this in December. We wait till January because we don't want to miss anybody.
Right.
We did part one last week. We're finishing it up today. We're working chronologically, so we're into July now as we continue through the list that we started last week. We're trying not to be too sad as we go through this. It's more like a celebration of what they did, so we try to keep things relatively light as we go through it. Should be good. And also we have our beverages, we have our coffee and our water, and anytime we hit a name on the list of someone that we actually saw in person or someone that we met at some point, we shall stop and take a shot of coffee or water. So again, you know, the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And you ready to go?
Sure am.
Off we go, and we'll try to move quickly. We're starting with another New Orleans musician, because we covered Dr. John on last week's show, but also we lost Art Neville, was 81, and of course one of the Neville brothers,
right,
and also one of the Meters.
Yeah, I didn't know that about Art.
Yeah, there was also a band called the Meters.
I knew the Meters. I don't think I knew anybody in it.
Yeah, because the Meters were nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a few years back. They didn't make it in, but maybe at some point they will.
I was definitely rooting for them.
That was the great Art Neville, keyboardist and whatnot, from the world of, funk and R&B and all that stuff they're doing down there.
Yes.
With those Nevilles, you know? Art Neville. Russie Taylor was 75, and this lady did a lot of classic cartoon voice work over the years. And to run through a handful of her credits, Gonzo on the Muppet Babies.
Which I've been watching a lot of lately.
I know you love your Muppet Babies. She was Baby Gonzo. She was the voice of Strawberry Shortcake. On The Simpsons, she was Martin Prince. And she was the twins, Sherry and Terry, and a bunch more. But what she was best known for was Minnie Mouse.
It's amazing to think that the same voice actor voiced Minnie Mouse and Baby Gonzo.
Sure.
Such variety.
And here's some weird trivia, Cornflake. I don't have the guy's name in front of me, but I do remember from reading about Russie that her husband, her real-life husband, was the voice of Mickey Mouse.
Aww.
Isn't that crazy?
That's adorable, is what that
is. It really was. Russie Taylor, Minnie Mouse. From the world of comic books, comics artist Ernie Colon, I was a fan of. Ernie died at 88, and I think I knew him best from a DC Comics series in the 80s. He was the co-creator of Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld. Which was a really nice series. It was about a teenage girl, like in the regular normal world, but then she would be transported to this other dimension where she was the princess of this fantasy world.
Neat.
Yeah, and it was a very, very nice series. Now, Ernie Colon drew a lot of other comics for DC and for Marvel, and I think even in very recent years, he did some like political-themed comics. Ernie Colon, I was a fan of back in the 80s. Here's a guy fans of the Dr. Demento show remember. From the world of comedy music, we know the name Kip Adada.
Yes.
Kip was 75, and he was a stand-up comedian, certainly back in the 60s. But what really made him immortal to fans of the Dr. Demento show were his novelty records.
Yes, the Wet Dreams song.
That was a big one, and it was just a bunch of fish puns.
Yes.
Set to music.
Yep.
And a huge hit, one of the most requested songs, I think, in the history of Dr. Demento show. And I remember another one. He did a follow-up called Life in the Slaw Lane, which was all vegetable puns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just the same thing. Just goofy music, bunch of vegetable puns. So as a fan of puns, which I'm really not, but I appreciated
even
me, who's not way into puns, I did like Kip Adada. Peter Fonda was 79, and his most iconic role certainly was Easy Rider in the late 60s. The movie that probably most encapsulated the counterculture scene that was happening back then. Peter Fonda, he played Captain America. Not the superhero, but just a dude on a motorcycle who went by that name.
Yep.
In the movie with Dennis Hopper and Jack Nicholson. Crazy, crazy movie. I think I've only seen it once many years ago and did lots more beyond that. I was Oscar nominated for Yulee's Gold in the 90s. Part of that Fonda family, of course, you know, Henry Fonda, and he's Jane Fonda's little brother. Bridget Fonda is his daughter. That's a dynasty in Hollywood, of course. And then, oh man, now we have Valerie Harper.
Yeah.
Valerie Harper was 80, and who didn't love Valerie Harper, you know? Came to prominence in the 70s on the Mary Tyler Moore show, because she was Mary's roommate, Rhoda. And then was so popular that they spun her off into her own show, Rhoda.
Rhoda, yep.
Was hugely popular in its own right, and she was terrific. Then there was Valerie, the sitcom Valerie in the mid-80s, which she was kind of forced out of, right? She was the star of the show.
Star.
Obviously, they named the show after her. The show was called Valerie. This was the show with Jason Bateman, was one of her sons on it, and Edie McClurg was on it. Great fun 80s sitcom. They changed the name of the show to Valerie's Family.
Yep.
Then they transitioned to the Hogan Family.
The Hogan Family, yep.
Then they changed it to just the Hogans.
Yep.
So I went through like at least four names. And she stuck at it after that. I think she had a show called City after that. So she kept on working, doing more sitcoms. But yeah.
The Hogans just wasn't the same without her.
Well, they brought in Sandy Duncan. Valerie was replaced by Sandy Duncan. But yeah, we missed Valerie Harper, and we certainly miss her now. Did some great work in TV sitcoms. And, okay, take a drink, Cornflake, in memory of Eddie Money.
Eddie Money, oh.
Eddie Money was 70 years old, and I saw Eddie perform just once, and I know the year. I saw Eddie in the year 2000.
Wow.
And Eddie was opening for Styx and REO Speedwagon. So there's a show. But he had quite a run of hits.
Yeah, he did.
Clear through the 80s. Oh, yeah. Eddie had such a voice. Like, his voice carried a lot of those songs. Like,
so distinct.
Take Me Home Tonight, maybe the biggest one, the one that Ronnie Spector sings on. But
the biggest one, not my favorite, though. My favorite is I Want to Go Back.
Yeah, I Want to Go Back and Endless Nights and a bunch. We could go on and on. I could rattle off another half dozen hit songs beyond that. Yeah, so it was fun to see him come out and do all those hits, opening for Styx and REO. He played the saxophone as well. He was his own sax guy in his band.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. Very capable saxophone player. Very, very fun live performer. And he was still out there touring constantly right up until this past year.
Wow.
And I think the mayor's not here. Felicity normally joins us for these memorial shows, but once again, the mayor was not available for this show. But I should point out the very first concert the mayor of Chickentown ever went to was Eddie Money. With the all-girl hair metal band Vixen opening. That's a cool show.
Yeah.
So a couple of us here on Team Flopcast got to experience live Eddie Money.
And one of us is just jealous.
And wow, we're not going anywhere on the topic of 80s classic rock, because up next we have one of my very favorites and yours too, I think.
Yes.
We're up to Rick Ocasek, so take another drink. Rick Ocasek, frontman of The Cars, of course, was 75 years old.
Well, I saw that in the news. I thought of you right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is Kevin okay?
Man, I love The Cars so much. One of my favorite bands of all time, of course. I saw Rick live three times. 1987, original Cars lineup in 87, their final concert tour. And they broke up right after that tour. That was the end of The Cars. I saw Rick in the mid-90s. And Rick did not tour and perform a lot. He kept putting out records. And I saw him in, I think, 97 at the Paradise Rock Club in Boston. Great, great show. He put together a band, like a supergroup, to back him up. There was a guy from Bad Religion in that band. Greg Hawkes, the keyboardist from The Cars, was in the band with Rick that night. He had Melissa Auftemar, who was the bassist from Hole and from Smashing Pumpkins. She was in the band. I heard afterwards that his wife, supermodel Paulina Poroskova, was at that show that night.
Wow.
I didn't see her. I would have recognized her. So I don't know where Paulina was hiding, but she was kept a safe distance from creeps like me, evidently.
Oh, wow.
I saw Rick a third time just a few years ago, 2011. They did a Cars reunion without Ben, of course, who had died by that point. But the remaining four guys got together, did a new album, and did a very brief limited tour. And we got to see him on that tour, which was very cool. I recommend people seek out, if you're a Cars fan, if you love all those old classic Cars songs, seek out Rick's solo stuff. He put out six or seven solo albums, I think. So if you're a Cars fan, you could double the amount of music you have of Rick's by getting the solo stuff.
Stuff out there just waiting for you to enjoy it.
Yeah, a lot of it, even most of it, is very much like the Cars. Even Greg Hawkes plays keyboard on almost all of it. So you've got that sound.
Oh, Greg Hawkes.
Yeah, and it was certainly so fun seeing the Cars get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was just a couple of years ago that they finally got in.
Yeah.
So, of course, we say goodbye to the wonderful Rick Ocasek. Let's jump into Star Trek now, because a couple of Star Trek people are on this list, I believe.
Yes.
Sad to say, but Aaron Eisenberg was only 50 years old, so he was very young when he was a recurring character on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He was a Ferengi.
Yes.
You know those Ferengis? He was Nog. So here's a guy that spent a lot of time in the makeup chair.
Yeah.
A lot of prosthetics if you want to be a Ferengi. Get those giant ears on. Aaron Eisenberg was very good on Star Trek. Okay, moving along. Sid Haig was 80 years old. Horror fans know Sid Haig because he did a lot of horror A lot of the blaxploitation movies of the 70s, Sid Haig would be like the evil criminal dude in, played the bad guy in almost everything he did, but a lot of weird horror movies as well. I knew him best from a Filmation Saturday morning show, because you know I love my Filmation.
Yes.
Live action 70s Saturday morning show, Jason of Star Command. He was always the bad guy. Everything he did, he was the bad guy in Jason of Star Command. Dragos, I believe his name was. Really scary, weird-looking dude. And he just kept doing that, playing weird, scary-looking dude for decades. Sid Haig. Rob Garrison was just 59 years old, and his biggest credit was The Karate Kid. From your Cobra Kai dojo in The Karate Kid, he was Tommy. And people best remember Tommy from during that climactic final scene, the end of the tournament. And this is the character that screamed out, "Get him a body bag."
Oh, yeah.
And was just laughing maniacally. That was this guy, Rob Garrison.
And now somebody's got to get him a body
bag. Oh, you know, we were all thinking at Cornflake, but did you have to?
Why else do you have me on this show?
If not to be inappropriate. Good point. But actually, on Cobra Kai, on the new Cobra Kai TV series, in season 2, there was one episode of Cobra Kai where they reunited all the original Cobra Kai members. And I'm not going to spoil anything about what happened in that episode, but that was, as they say, a very special episode of Cobra Kai, including Rob Garrison. So it was nice that he got to reprise his Cobra Kai role one more time. Marshall Efron was 81. Not a super well-known guy, but a guy that did a lot of cartoon voice work, especially in the 80s. He was one of the Smurfs. He was Sloppy Smurf.
Everybody remembers Sloppy Smurf.
Not one of your biggest names in the Smurfs, but he was in there. But he did voices on the Snorks, on the Shirt Tails.
I loved the Snorks and the Shirt Tails.
The Biscuits. Quickie Koala. He did it all back then. My favorite credit, though, as a fan of Kid Video, we had to throw in a mention of Marshall Efron because of the Copycats.
Right.
Their evil rival band in the flip side was the Copycats, and he was Fat Cat.
Oh, he was.
So he makes the list. Marshall Efron. We love Kid Video.
Yep.
Moving on from the Copycats to another great band, maybe even better, arguably, was the Muffs, a classic punk pop band. From the 90s and beyond was the Muffs, and sad to say that she was only 56, but Kim Shattuck was front woman of the Muffs, and they were cool. She was a great, great punk rock vocalist, and she could scream. She had a great screaming voice when she needed to, and they're really fun, so I recommend everybody check out the Muffs. Really
need
cool
a little
stuff.
More screaming in your world.
You really could use some more screaming from the Muffs. Check out the work of Kim Shattuck. Diane Carroll was 84 and a very accomplished actor and singer. She won a Tony Award in the early 60s. I think the first African-American woman to win a leading Tony Award. And also her show Julia. She had a TV series called Julia in the late 60s, early 70s. And was the first leading African-American woman in a TV series in a role that was not like, she wasn't the maid.
Right.
She was the star.
The leading lady.
Of the show. Yeah. Yeah, and she was a nurse on that show. That was called Julia. Now, for our purposes.
Here we go.
We got to do it.
Yep.
Probably not her proudest credit, but maybe the most important credit for us was last year I showed you for the first time. The Star Wars Holiday Special. And
Diane, this is the part that I remember best.
Diane Carroll starred in what was essentially Wookiee porn.
Yep.
Because Art Carney shows up with some virtual reality video for Chewbacca's father, Grandpa Itchy. And it was beautiful. Diane Carroll.
Yeah, she was amazing in it. But
performing for the amusement and enjoyment of Itchy the Wookiee.
Right.
And very suggestively, it was shocking that the dialogue that they gave Diane Carroll for this children's variety special in 1978.
Yeah. When that part came on, yeah.
But she was great and she was beautiful and she sang beautifully. But it was all for the amusement of Itchy. But that was Diane Carroll. Ginger Baker Ginger Baker was 80, and he was the drummer in Cream.
Oh.
Classic rock trio Cream with Eric Clapton, right. You know, back in the day. So we must make note of Ginger Baker, another Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, of course, as a member of Cream. And another classic rock guy is next on my list, and that's Larry Junstrom, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I think was 70 years old, a founding member of Lynyrd Skynyrd, bass player, but then spun off, a couple of guys from Lynyrd Skynyrd spun off to form 38 Special.
Oh,
so he was also a longtime member of 38 Special from 1977 right up through 2014. And I think I just missed him. I saw 38 Special in 2014.
I was about to say, are we taking a drink here?
We're not taking a drink. I mean, feel free, but I'm pretty sure I just missed them. I think when I saw 38 Special, I think the front man was the only guy left. But they're still out there.
Yes.
And they're really good.
Amazing.
I recommend go see 38 Special. but that was Larry Johnston, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and 38 Special. So I assume another Hall of Fame inductee. Not for 38 Special.
Nope.
Maybe someday. Okay, Karen Pendleton was 73, and Karen was an original member of the Mickey Mouse Club. So part of that original lineup, original show back in the 50s. And I remember seeing these reruns back in the day. They would still show the old Mickey Mouse Club. Because I remember Karen, because she was one of the two youngest ones on the show. They'd kind of pair them up. It was Cubby and Karen.
Mm-hmm.
They were the two littlest Mouseketeers. Did you watch a lot of Mickey Mouse Club?
Not the original.
No. But there were later versions of it as well.
The remake of it.
Wasn't Britney Spears on it?
Yes.
Did you watch the Britney Spears version?
Timberlake, yes.
Yeah, they were all in there.
Yep.
All the teen pop stars of the late 90s and beyond came out of the Mouse Club. Rip Taylor was 88.
Now, when Rip Torn died...
Last week's Memorial Part 1 had Rip Torn.
There's not too many people out there named Rip, is there?
There were two, and we lost them both in 2019. Rip Taylor was 88, and he was the goofy one of the two. You had Rip Torn, who was a comic actor, but...
But presented himself pretty seriously.
Rip Taylor was just a goofball, and that was his gig for decades. He'd pop up on variety shows and game shows and talk shows, and his bit was he would just come out, run around like a nut, and throw confetti everywhere.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, he was always packing confetti.
I love it.
Yeah, Rip Taylor, he just ran around being a nut. And as Out of Control Brady Bunch fans, we must note... The Brady Bunch variety show in the 70s, the one with Fake Jan, Rip Taylor was a regular on the Brady Bunch variety show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so in addition to the Bradys, Rip Taylor was hanging around. I think they tried to pair him up with Alice, the maid.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Robert Forster was 78 years old and a longtime character actor. Did a lot of kind of cool, kind of low-budget kind of movies back in the day. And was really off my radar until the 90s, until Jackie Brown, which was Quentin Tarantino, his follow-up movie after Pulp Fiction. The next movie he made was Jackie Brown, starring Pam Grier. He kind of fished out these old actors that had kind of been forgotten, and he paired Pam Grier and Robert Forster. And Robert Forster was just a revelation, to me at least. And then since then, I went back and saw some of the older stuff that he made in the 70s and 80s. Jackie Brown kind of lost among the Tarantino movies, I think.
Mm.
So I recommend, it's good. I recommend people go back to Jackie Brown and you see a great performance. Alexei Leonov, whose name I'm probably butchering right now, but a Russian, a cosmonaut, was 85 years old and an important guy in the history of space travel. And so he made the list because this was the first person to walk in space. And I think 1965. First dude to actually, you know, step outside the spaceship.
Wow.
Go wander around like Interplanet Janet.
So what it must have been like to first step out of the spaceship and have to trust that everything was going to work to keep him alive.
Must have been a little scary.
And then to, like, realize that you're not dead. And then start exploring
the
space.
The first thing you check, am I dead?
Am I dead? I'm not dead. Wow, I'm doing a thing that nobody else has ever done.
He was probably looking around for squirrels.
Space squirrels.
Could always appreciate a space squirrel.
Secret space squirrels.
Those are the secret squirrels. If there's a black squirrel in space, good luck finding it until it's clawing at your spacesuit. Hey.
Which you never want.
No, you don't want that to happen. So he may have seen some space squirrels. He may have seen Interplanet Janet. He may have run into Robilar from Mars.
Hmm.
There's a chance.
Maybe that's where the Earth fruit came from.
Bill Macy was 97 years old. Speaking of the Star Wars holiday special, one of the other stars of the special, of course, was Bea Arthur.
She was amazing in that.
Just one more round, friends, running that cantina bar. But on her 70s sitcom, you know, pre-Golden Girls, Bea Arthur was a big star on Maude.
Maude, right.
Bill Macy was Maude's husband.
Oh.
On Maude. And I knew him even better, though, from The Jerk. Steve Martin's movie,
oh,
The Jerk.
Oh, yeah.
He's the guy whose glasses Steve Martin fixes by inventing the OptiGrab, the one handle in the middle to take your glasses on and off. And then he goes off and markets and makes a fortune selling the OptiGrab. He was a goofy guy.
I can believe it.
Bill Macy. Doug Luban, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, was 71 years old, a bass player, but most noteworthy for being essentially the unofficial bass player for The Doors.
Oh.
You know, there are four guys in The Doors, the classic lineup, but no bass player. But there was bass on a lot of their records, and most of it was played by this guy, Doug Luban, who was, in reading up on him, he was invited at one point to become a full-time member of The Doors, but turned it down because of another project he was working on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
we've never heard of, right?
He may have been trying to put together, like, Men Without Hats or something. I don't know. He was busy. Michael J. Pollard was 80 years old and did tons of acting on all kinds of stuff over the years. I believe a famous episode of Star Trek. He was on one of the early episodes of Star Trek, Bonnie and Clyde. Pops up in Scrooged. I remember him from an episode of Lost in Space. He was like this weird kid floating around in outer space. He may have run into that
Alexei.
Russian cosmonaut in 1965 as well, because it occurs to me that was the year Lost in Space started. So yeah, yeah, Michael J. Pollard also wandering around in space. Another cool credit was the live-action Superboy TV series of the late 80s. He played Mr. Mixius Pitlick.
Oh.
Somebody had to, you know? And also as a fan of Alice, the sitcom Alice, I don't think he appeared on Alice, but in real life, at one time he was married to Beth Howland, who played Vera on Alice.
Ah.
So that makes him a very important dude
yes.
around here. Gahan Wilson, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. Gahan? How do you pronounce that name?
Gahan,
okay. A cartoonist, and a guy whose work you recognize when you see it, had a very distinctive style, and did a lot of just very peculiar, weird little cartoons. And did a lot of books and book covers and posters and things. Very, very funny. Did a lot of work for Playboy, actually. Because Playboy, I mean, people know Playboy, you know, for boobs.
Right.
But there are tons of cartoons in Playboy, not just naughty cartoons. Gahan Wilson was a regular cartoonist for Playboy as well for decades and did lots, lots more beyond that. Worked with Neil Gaiman on a couple of projects even. Very cool stuff. I like his work a lot. He was 89. Going back to Star Trek, DC Fontana was a writer on many versions of Star Trek over the years, and she went by DC Fontana, but her name was Dorothy Fontana, so unusual that a woman would have that high profile a role as a writer in a science fiction TV back then, so that's cool.
Very
respectful. She wrote on the original Star Trek series and the animated series, the cartoon that they did in the 70s. She was a key contributor to that as well. And beyond that, she wrote for Next Generation and for Deep Space Nine, I think, and lots of stuff beyond that. She wrote for, like, Buck Rogers and Babylon 5, DC Fontana. Another Star Trek guy now. We're not done with Star Trek, but this is a big one. Rene Auberjonois, who I think I first really knew well from Benson.
Yes.
Sitcom Benson with Robert Guillaume. This was Clayton. Clayton Endicott III on Benson.
Clayton.
So one of the two real adversarial characters for Benson. You had Clayton, you had Miss Krauss.
Right.
You know, but man, he was funny on that. He was on everything. He popped up on every TV show in the 70s and 80s, of course. But this was probably his longest running show was Benson. And then resurfaced in the 90s as Odo, the shape-shifting alien on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I was not a big fan of Deep Space Nine, but I was a big fan of Odo.
And another big credit that we should mention from Renee was the MASH movie, the original MASH movie before the TV show. He was the original Father Mulcahy, plus a million other things.
Yes.
all right, hang on, Cornflake. Carol Spinney was 85.
I'm just going to take a drink before we even get started.
We should just drain every beverage left in the building right now for Carol Spinney. Of course, we're talking Big Bird. We're talking Oscar the Grouch. So this is a sad one, but he was 85, and what a life Carol Spinney had. And you can see that life, and you should. If you have not yet seen the documentary I Am Big Bird, it's magnificent. Came out, what, 4 years ago or so, I guess? Mm-hmm. The mayor and I first saw it when it premiered at the Brattle Theater in Boston, and Carol was there that night. He came out on stage at the end of the movie with Oscar. He came out with the Oscar puppet. We were in the front row, and suddenly here's real Oscar the Grouch was right in front of us.
Did he talk about the importance of Oscar in Sesame Street?
Oscar was a huge part of Sesame Street.
He was so important, I think, because he showed that you could be yourself and still be a part of what's going on, and you could be grouchy and not happy and smiley all the time and still be included.
You can live in a trash can.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Absolutely.
And Carol was a regular convention attendee as well, and so we got to see him, and he got to meet his fans. He appeared at several Super Mega Fests here in Massachusetts.
I remember watching him walk through the crowd and everyone just parting to let him through in the lobby.
He was a big, tall guy. Everybody knew who he was, and everybody loved seeing him there. And yeah, he went to Super Mega Fest several times. I know he was at Dragon Con a couple of times in recent years. He was there just a couple of years ago. I had a nice conversation with Carol once a few years ago, and his wife. He had this wonderful wife, Deborah, and she was just the best. And when you appreciate what he did for decades as Big Bird, especially, because that is not a normal puppet operation.
Yeah.
That's, you're inside that bird suit. He has one arm to work one of Big Bird's wings. The other arm is straight up in the air.
It's like he's raising his hand for hours.
You've got to hold that arm up to work the Big Bird's head. You cannot see out of the costume. So he had a monitor inside the bird suit.
Imagine raising your hand and waiting for the teacher to call on you, and then multiply that by about 1,000.
Yeah, there's the physical workout of doing that, plus the logistics of acting in a scene where you can't really see the people around you, to have to walk and move and deal with the people around you, just seeing everything through a monitor.
And that's his voice, right?
Oh yeah, he's the voice of Big Bird and Oscar. A remarkable puppeteer and performer and artist. He did some nice visual art. He was an illustrator as well. He autographed our copy of the DVD for the documentary and drew a little cartoon of Big Bird on the DVD case when he signed it. You know, of course, we got 50 years of Sesame Street and Big Bird and Oscar from Carol, but also that he really shared himself and opened himself up to his fans as a person. Carol Spinney. And let's move on. This is taking too long, as it does every year, right?
Right. We want to give people their due.
The end is in sight, Cornflake. We're into December now. We've been moving chronologically. But Marie Fredriksson, this was a sad one that kind of caught everybody off guard. Marie Fredriksson was 61. We spoke of her not long ago on the Flopcast. This was the front woman of Roxette.
Oh,
because when we were going through a bunch of top 10 lists.
And you were asking me whether or not that was her name, and I can tell you that it wasn't her name, but I didn't know what her name was.
Yeah, I did not know. I knew the hits of Roxette, but I was not a Roxette super fan, and so I didn't know. I was like, is that the girl's name? Was she named Roxette? And he said, no, it wasn't. And her name was Marie Fredriksson. What a voice on that lady.
Amazing.
All those hits in the late 80s, early 90s, they were massive. That was internationally a massive band that came out of Sweden. They were kind of like the new ABBA for a while there in the late 80s. Roxette, that was Marie. Another sad one. This one caught me off guard, caught everybody off guard. We mentioned Alice just a few minutes ago, the sitcom Alice, but Philip McKeon was only 55 years old. He was Alice's son, Tommy, on the sitcom Alice.
And sibling of
Nancy. That's Nancy's big brother.
Nancy McKeon.
Nancy McKeon, of course, was Joe on The Facts of Life. Yeah, they were brother and sister, both starring on sitcoms back then. Yeah, Nancy, we mentioned just a couple of weeks ago, because we saw a fleeting glimpse of Nancy in Ken Field's Christmas movie this year. There was one Alice episode that they both appeared in together.
Oh.
And this is pre-Facts of Life, so very, very young Nancy McKeon appeared on one episode of Alice. But Philip, that was really his main acting credit. He kind of got out of acting after that, worked in radio a lot after that, I believe, but was very good on Alice. Danny Aiello was 86. His first big credit, I think, was in Godfather Part 2. But that was kind of off my radar. I really knew him in, well, especially Do the Right Thing, 1989. You know, Spike Lee, Danny Aiello was the pizza shop owner in Do the Right Thing. As 80s pop fans, we should note he's also Madonna's Papa Don't Preach video. That's Papa.
Oh, that's, wow.
Yeah, did a little acting in a Madonna music video.
I didn't know that.
That was Danny Aiello as well in Papa Don't Preach. Allie Willis was 72 and primarily a songwriter, did some big hit songs in the 70s and 80s. The Neutron Dance for Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
A favorite of ours, she did. I'll Be There for You, the theme from Friends by the Rembrandts.
Yeah, Rembrandts.
She was a co-writer of that song.
Oh, wow.
Pet Shop Boys, What Have I Done to Deserve This? And a bunch, bunch more. This could go on and on, but maybe one of the biggest ones, though, was Earth, Wind, and Fire, September, which is just one of the best songs ever.
Ever, yes.
That's Allie Willis, so she did some good stuff. Allie was 72. We're getting there, Cornflake. We're wrapping up very quickly. I think I have three more names left, but Lee Mendelson was 86, a name that we saw again and again growing up, and to this day, you see his name in the credits of all the Charlie Brown TV specials.
Uh-huh.
He produced all of them. This was the original guy that was approached to produce a Charlie Brown Christmas special, and then he worked with Charles Schulz. They brought in Bill Melendez as the director. Lee Mendelson was the one who hired Vince Guaraldi to do the music.
Oh.
So this was that super team being assembled to create the 1965 Charlie Brown Christmas, and then the team that went on to keep producing all the Charlie Brown TV specials and movies, and the Saturday morning series, produced everything for decades. That was Lee Mendelson. And that's one of those names. You see the name? Oh, yeah, of course I see that name, because I'm staring at those credits every year when they start singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Appropriately, I suppose, Lee Mendelson died on Christmas Day this year.
Wow.
How about that? Produced Garfield and Friends also. So I did a little bit of non-Peanuts work as well. Neil Innes, not a name that I recognized, but people who were into Monty Python jumped all over this name when he died. I started learning about Neil Innes very quickly. He was 75, did a lot of work with the Monty Python guys. He was a musician and a composer, worked on the music for Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Some of those songs are his.
Yes.
The whistling in Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, that's the guy whistling Cornflake, I learned in my research today.
Oh, I love it.
So how about that? And the Ruddles, when Eric Idle did his kind of Beatles parody project,
yes,
the Ruddles.
Yes, the spoof.
Neil Innes was, I believe, one of the Ruddles and certainly worked on all the music.
Yes.
And all that. Again, I'm not a Monty Python guy, so I'm speaking beyond my knowledge at this point. And all right, one more Cornflake. Story just broke a day or two ago as we record, so we got this one in just under the wire, and a big one for us, and sad to say, Jack Sheldon was 88, very respected musician and TV performer, and considered a great trumpet player as well. He will live on forever, though, as the voice, the singing voice from Schoolhouse Rock. This is the guy that sang I'm Just a Bill.
Yeah.
Conjunction, Junction, and a bunch more beyond that. That big, booming, wonderful voice from so many classic Schoolhouse Rock songs was Jack Sheldon.
Mr. Morton.
Yes, yes, the Mr. Morton song. That's Jack Sheldon.
Everything he did, I loved. He was far and away my favorite.
Certainly one of the most recognizable voices. They had their stable of singers that they used. Jack Sheldon, the biggest, most instantly recognizable Schoolhouse Rock singer. Obviously, we lost Bob Dureau last year, and Bob Dureau sang probably more of them than anybody and wrote a lot of the Schoolhouse Rock songs. A lot of the math songs was Bob Dureau. But Jack Sheldon was that crazy, booming powerhouse of a voice.
I never met him, but I just drank all my coffee. And
do it. Do it.
Jack Sheldon.
I can name a few more. The Energy Blues was Jack Sheldon. Body Machine. Naughty Number Nine.
Naughty Number Nine.
The Pronoun Song. Rufus Xavier Sarsaparilla.
Oh, yeah.
How about that? You know, so he did a bunch of them and was just the best. So there's a good one to end on.
Wow.
One of our very favorites, and of course important to me personally with my band Sponge Awareness Foundation, we did and continue to do. Anytime we play You know we do a medley of Schoolhouse Rock, and we bookend our Schoolhouse Rock medley with Jack Sheldon songs, because our medley starts with I'm Just a Bill, and it ends with Conjunction Junction, because you got to end and start strong, and it did not get any better than Jack Sheldon. There you go, Cornflake. That was 2019. That's not a complete list. That was my pared-down list so that we could somehow hopefully do this and not take up too much time.
You did a fantastic job putting this all together, Kevin. I mean, I was just here to hear about it, honestly.
And we're kind of we're operating at a handicap this year because we don't have the mayor, who's always very insightful on these shows, but we don't have the mayor available for our memorial shows this year. So hopefully we'll have her back on the show next time she's available. But yeah, that made it a little trickier this year, operating without the mayor, because she can fill in a lot of details that we cannot. I know she knows Monty Python better than we do. She knows Doctor Who. She knows a lot of old science fiction stuff better than we do. But we got through it.
We did.
And hopefully that was still fun for everybody, you know?
It's nice to remember them all.
Yeah, yeah. Again, we look at this as a celebration of people that did some cool stuff over the years.
This show gives you a chance to really reflect. And well, I appreciate that every time it comes around, despite my saying, oh no, it's deathless time again.
We're never going to stop singing Conjunction Junction.
Right.
Just try and stop us. We are at Aresia this weekend as this show comes out. I think the show is coming out on like Aresia Day 3. So if you listen to this as soon as it comes out Sunday, come on out to Aresia, the big Boston science fiction fantasy convention, and you may find us there. And it's not too late to catch my final panel. We'll be midday on Monday at Aresia. Catch us there if you can. Cornflake, let's wrap this up.
Okay, well, I can do that. We're at flopcast.net, facebook.com/flopcast, at flopcast on Twitter, and @_flopcast on Instagram.
Yes, sounds good. So we'll be back next week, maybe from Aresia, we'll see.
Quite possible.
We'll have some Aresia stuff for you, probably, next week. But who knows? Maybe we'll just be appreciating squirrels.
Try and stop us.
That listeners. Works too. See you there.
Peace and cookies.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we host the Watchathon of Rassilon.
A journey through all of Doctor Who, one serial at a time.
Listen in and you will learn about
true facts.
Tune in and hear our
final thoughts.
Find out how little we actually know about science, history,
Doctor Who,
and pretty much anything else.
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
A proud member of the ESO Network.
Available wherever you get your podcast fix.
Keep calm and wrassle on.
Goodbye, and I love you.
And hello, Cornflake. Welcome to the secret after show.
Here we are.
Nobody's listening. You may speak freely.
Okay.
What's going on?
Well, I guess I can mention a podcast I started listening to recently.
Oh, yeah? What
you
got?
I think is fun. It's called Off Menu. You know how I was talking about James Acaster last week, my favorite comedian.
A couple weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
It was, you mentioned James Acaster, a guy
it
I was
a
not,
couple weeks
not
ago.
Familiar with.
He and another comedian that I really like, a guy named Ed Gamble, have this podcast where they invite celebrities on to talk about what their dream meal would be, start to finish. Starter.
Their dream meal.
Three-piece meal. Starter.
Eat whatever you want.
Almost whatever you want.
What do you have? So, what are the ground rules? What can you not eat on the show?
Well, here's the thing. Before they invite the guest on, they determine up front that there is one ingredient that the guest cannot mention. And if the guest mentions that ingredient, without warning, they will be escorted from the restaurant. The podcast is called Off Menu. Don't listen to it when you're hungry.
Yes, yes. I know something we could reveal just for the secret after show right now.
Oh, do it, do it.
If we sound extra goofy and extra sleepy right now, today, why tis New Year's Day.
It's still New Year's Day, that's right.
We have just finished just now recording 3 episodes in a row. Episode 400, 401, and this 402. We've just been knocking out one after the other all in one marathon recording session right now.
Because we are hardcore.
You know? And now it occurs to me, as long as we're at this, if you want to knock out like 49 more shows right now, we could take the rest of the year off.
I'm going home.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network.
Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.